It's time for the Access of Easy podcast, the weekly technology digest that keeps you ahead of the curve. Brought to you by EasyDNS.com.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Access of Easy podcast, a hastily assembled studio today, thanks to a midweek CBP rip. My name is Joey. That's Len, the other panel buddy. What is going on? Thursday night, NFL draft night. How's things over there?
It's good. Yeah, I picked up today Cordell Stewart. I got
Slash.
Nice. Yeah, why not? Well, you can say it gives me some flexibility. So, yeah. How about you? How's things over there?
Great. I just came back from a buddy's house. We drafted Jaden Daniels. I'm looking forward to seeing what he does. A little thin, but fast as all hell. RG4, as I like to call him. Anyway, we got lots to talk about tonight. Let's start with last week's quote of the week. Until you make the unconscious conscious, it will direct your life and you will call it fate. That was by Carl Jung Nico, whose name I'm pretty sure I'm not. Carl Jung. Nico got it right. So if you're a Nico listener, viewer, well done. Good job. This week's quote, Len: truth is like the sun. You can shut it out for a time, but it ain't going away. If you know who that was by, put it in the comment section. As always, no Googling, no searching, none of that stuff. And if you get it right, if you're the first person to get it right, I should say, because there's often multiple winners, you get your first round of renewals on EasyDNS. Mark will pay for your renewals, which you can't beat. Len, lots to talk about this week in data, region over region. Where do you want to start, my man?
Yeah, let's go right to the AI censorship, because researchers, they have been investigating the way AI chatbots, you know, the ones we know and love, the open GPTs and stuff like that. Well, these chatbots, the responses for them, there's some controversial topics that people are putting into them, and the responses are very interesting. Their findings, its researchers' findings, suggest that these chatbots are programmed to avoid generating content for nearly half of these controversial prompts. For instance, none of the chatbots included in the study would create content that argues against transgendered women's participation in sports. And so this raises the concerns about the potential bias about these AI systems and how it might influence the information of the user base. The current moderation policy surrounding this stuff is vague. That's being lenient too. And it's leaving a lot of room for subjective interpretation by moderators. And this could lead to situations where the same content is being flagged as inappropriate by one moderator, but not by another one. And in this, they're restricting the generation of even debatable content that can have negative consequences for free speech and access to information. And this all suggests that such limitations may steer the users towards fringe chatbots that promote extreme views and potentially creating an online space where users are.
You can barely contain your excitement here reading the story, I can tell.
It's pretty funny stuff. But well, to be honest, let's break it down. AI chatbots, they don't just spawn out of thin air. They are done, somebody programmed them, or some people or a group of people, whatever, and they are done with some nuanced, and as a result, the responses are tailored to what the programmers want it to be. So if we think that this is something that is odd, it may be, but you have to go to the root of the problem. Who are the people responsible for creating it, and what can be done to make things more open, if it's at all possible? But what can we say about this? Competition, you have options, go ahead and find something that's better.
I actually don't think this is a relevant story, and I'll tell you why. Not as there's not problems with the GPT models, of course there are. This idea that you mentioned about how there's kind of like implication that there is a degree of separation between the people who program the models and the models themselves, the feedback and the output. It's not exactly true. The reason I think the story is irrelevant is because I don't know for sure that everyone feels this way. I would imagine you do, though. Isn't the main focus or the main use of a GPT model at this point just to get it to spit out some response that everyone with two brain cells to rub together knows is not true? Who's using these things for anything except like memeable clickbait response posting on Twitter? I don't think anyone's really using these to garner any real information that is used in a way that is consequential or anything like that. It's not feasible. We've talked many times about this like feedback loop that these things offer now, because the people who use them for those types of to try and get those types of responses, the stuff that's actually consequential, like data packages, for example, those people don't know whether the data is good or bad. And so bad data gets approved or thumbs up or you know, otherwise viewed as positive in terms of the response quality. And the response quality just goes down over time. I think that's what these things are for now, basically. Who's using an OpenGPT model for anything that matters these days? Can't be that many people, can it?
I've used not OpenGPT, but I used another one for checking out information related to the Canadian budget. I didn't want to sift through all the documents, and this helped me do it in a much quicker way. And I use that to compare it to previous budgets.
Are you confident in the feedback and the results?
Yeah, I am. They cite sources, so it seems pretty good. And it was just strictly numbers I was looking at, and it seemed fine. It's more of an advanced search engine. That's the only way I'm looking at it. And it just,
you said that before. I think that's a good framing, right? It's like a search engine, basically, that just is a little more, you know, user friendly.
Yeah, and it gives you more options and whatever. But let's keep this moving along, because this story is kind of interesting, because it's talking about GitHub.
Yeah, near and dear to us for sure. Yeah.
So according to a recent article or report, sorry, from Bleeping Computer, attackers have been exploiting a vulnerability in GitHub comments to distribute malware. And this vulnerability involves attaching malicious files to comments, then disguising them as legitimate files from trusted sources. This report describes this as a flaw or possibly a design decision by GitHub, and allows the attackers to leverage URLs associated with well-known repositories like Microsoft or host malware. So this is making malicious files appear more trustworthy to unsuspecting users. And while the report highlights that Microsoft's repository as a target, it also emphasizes that the vulnerability can be exploited with any repository on GitHub. And this creates a risk for convincing social engineering attacks. And we talked about, I don't know if we talked about it on this show in the past, but there was one with, I'm pretty sure it was this one on the show, that there was one done, I forget which software it was, but there was a social engineering attack. It was Linux.
And it was like over the course of a few years.
Yeah, there you go. So there's an example of that. So anyways, the report mentions that the smart loader malware is being used, and it is a common payload, but it also warns about other possibilities like Redline, and that's an information stealing malware. But right now, unfortunately, there are no settings for project owners to manage attached files or prevent this specific abuse. Disabling comments entirely is the only option available to fully protect a project's reputation, but this could only be done temporarily for a maximum of 6 months. This is interesting stuff, because given all the software and all the people using GitHub, it's concerning at the very least.
I mean, you know what else is on GitHub, obviously, right? You know, we'll switch to Bitcoin here for a sec, because that's the other big repo that, you know, you and I think about and is, you know, near and dear to us. Bitcoin's under attack by most first world governments now. In the last week, we saw Samurai and, you know, Samurai's servers and staff founders taken into custody. And today, talk about how no more non-KYC services on Bitcoin can be used. This is a bit, you know, I'll say adjacent to the GitHub thing. But I think the point I want to make is that GitHub hosts a lot of important project work. And Microsoft, I think you and I agree on this, is at this point, you know, basically an arm of the US government, I want to say, in a lot of ways. And it's still the best place to do projects like Bitcoin or Linux or whatever, because of the way that the sources, it's friendly to developers, it's friendly to users in a way that not a lot of things are friendly to both. And to me, Len, you're right, man. It's worrisome, isn't it? More than anything, that there's not really a solution for this in the short term. And I wouldn't be surprised if in the long term there was concessions made for, you know, nefarious accessibility, let's say, to third parties who are activist in nature in some regards. It's not good. But what's the alternative? Like, is it, there's no alternative out there. So what do you do, right? You're going to start compiling and doing other stuff on your own with what, like, you know, forum instructions? It seems unlikely. It's just, it sucks. This sucks more than anything else.
Well, you got to do a pull to update the code to compile the new
software. Yeah, PR, so right.
There's going to be some new... I don't know any off the top of my head, but I'm positive there exists some decentralized places where you could store. It may not be as user friendly, maybe a little slow, but I think that may be the solution moving forward, because that takes away any attack vectors and it keeps things just on a trustworthy basis. And every project will be deemed, you know, based on the merit of the project, will have the trust of the users. And that, I think that's the best way to move going forward, a la maybe a Noster style approach.
Yeah, no, you're right. You're right.
We'll see. Well, anyways, let's talk about this Arcane Door cyber espionage campaign. Arcane Door. it reminds me of like a RPG from the 90s, maybe 2000s.
Yeah, I don't know. Where do you sit? Is Arcane Door more of a map location or an item, in your opinion, in the RPG world?
It's a map location.
I'm you think, guessing. Yeah? I'm with you on that, I think, yeah.
But it's not really good. Anyways.
Two out of five.
That's being very generous. This is a hacking campaign where cyber spies, likely backed by a nation state, they were exploiting vulnerabilities in Cisco firewalls. And these firewalls are security appliances used by many organizations to protect their network. So the thing that's protecting the network is under attack. And the attackers leveraged two zero-day vulnerabilities, meaning that these were previously unknown flaws in the Cisco ASA and their firepower threat defense products. And Cisco has since identified these vulnerabilities. The report indicates that the government networks around the world were specifically targeted in these campaigns. So the attackers used the firewall vulnerabilities to gain access to these government networks, potentially stealing sensitive data or disrupting operations. And this has been going on for some time, since at least November 2023. And Cisco became aware of it a couple months later in January 2024 and discovered evidence that the attackers have been developing exploits for these vulnerabilities as late as July 2023. So this has been going on for some time, the development. They took advantage of it as November, and Cisco became aware of it as of January. So this is a well-planned and long-term operation. And Cisco has identified it and patched the vulnerabilities. And people out there that are running these Cisco products are advised to apply these patches right away, because it's the only way to protect yourself moving forward.
Yeah, easy to patch this stuff, even for the retail user. A quote from the article, Len, some other names for us to rank. In those intrusions, the hackers exploited two newly discovered vulnerabilities in Cisco's ASA products. One, which is calling Line Dancer.
Reminds me of LimeWire. So,
Line Dancer reminds you of LimeWire?
Is it Line Dancer or Line
Dancer? Line Dancer line would be dancer. 5 out of 5. Line Dancer is like a 1 out of 5.
They're both pretty crappy to me. I'm still with one. I'm harsh these days in these games. I want it good. I'm hardened.
Lets the hackers run their own malicious code in the memory of the network appliance, allowing them to issue commands to the devices, including the ability to spy on network traffic and steal data. Is there anything worse? As if there's anything worse than that. Spy on the network data and steal the data. You can't, you know, it doesn't get any worse than that for the retail user.
Kick to the nuts.
Basically, that's about it, right? Take you out back to the shed. But there's not many worse fates than that. And the other thing I'll mention here, we oftentimes dunk on like these smaller companies. We'll head over to the Trading View page, see what they're trading at, you know, pennies on the dollar. Are they better or worse than Toronto Star? Oftentimes the only companies that are reported on in this program are somewhat trading at lower than Toronto Star. Cisco, a monster. And I think, Len, in a year or so we've been doing this show, probably the first time we've had a vulnerability from them. So what's that tell you? The attacks are getting more complex, and everyone needs to be on alert, not just the Walmart shoppers for these types of services, but the people shopping at Mercedes and Jaguar too. So yeah, something to look out for, definitely for everybody.
More all the reason to run a Commodore 64. That guy will never be hacked.
No one's looking.
So a breach targeting something called Change Healthcare. This is a subsidiary of United Health that processes health data for millions of Americans. And hackers believed to be affiliated with the ALPHV ransomware group. I don't know if it's ALPHV. I'm not sure. Yeah. Anyways, they infiltrated the Change Healthcare systems back in February 2024. This is very recent. And United Health acknowledged that the hacker stole personal data and protected health information on a, what they claim, substantial portion of people in America. However, the exact number of individuals remain unknown. That's very concerning to me. The stolen data likely includes a combination of personal information like names, addresses, along with sensitive medical information. And the extent of the stolen data is still under review, and the data review process itself is expected to take several months. So if you are potentially impacted, and we don't know how many people there are, it's going to take a month before we know what's really been done here. And so much about this, we've heard this many, many times about this type of information stolen, this identity theft, medical fraud that could potentially come up, and potential misuse of sensitive health information. These places are honeypots for getting this type of information. They need to be better prepared to protect themselves for these type of attacks. And this is also highlighting the financial strain on Change Healthcare, because with United Health, they're estimating losses of up to $1.6 billion this year due to the disruption and recovery efforts. So this is very, very costly to them. I don't know. Just another one. What are you going to do? Like, think about it. If you have to get healthcare, health coverage, health anything, like anything to do with health, you go to a place and you expect them to protect your data.
The least you could do.
It's a very least. Please protect it. But you're giving them everything, right? Everything related to you, because they need to know your name, your date of birth, your medical history, everything. Because if they're going to be providing you medical treatment, they have to have this information on file to give you the best medical care and to ensure that you're going to be healthy. That type of information is very important. I don't know why they don't put up more of an effort to protect this information, but it's just, this is the case. And, you know, it's another one where they're going to get 2 years of credit monitoring service. And thanks for joining
us. Oh, man. I love this story. This is another banger from the healthcare system. I'm pretty sure ALPHV is actually alpha, but stylized. This is my inner millennial kind of talking here.
Oh, the A is
flipped upside around? Down. Yeah. It's like the return to tradition. The V is upside down. And the, anyway,
that's
story for another. Yeah. Story for another time. But here's a nice quote. Okay. The hackers were in Change Healthcare's network for more than a week before deploying the ransomware, allowing hackers to steal significant amounts of data from the company's systems. Len, there are 52 million people in United Healthcare's database. 52 million. 90% of them are in the United States. So let's say it's, you know, 48-something million, 46 million, something like that. You know, data at risk for all those people. Man, just...
And you know that information, they're not just there to get like medication for a cold or something like that.
They're not after whether or not you're on Ozempic, right? They just assume you're on it if you're in the States. But, you know, they want to know what else is going on. They want to know about your history, your tendencies, your background, your date, you know, date of birth, all this stuff. And like you said, you have no choice but to give people information when you need healthcare, because if you don't give it to them, you can't use their services. And if you can't use their services, you die. So, you know, you don't really have a choice. Tough situation, man. But again, Len, how many times have you talked about this in the last 6 months? Almost every 2 weeks, if not every week, another healthcare provider pwned by some hacking group. And this is nothing new, you know, not surprising, but disappointing all the same, like we like to say.
It's time to encrypt it and inscribe it. That's the only way to do it, I guess. Talk about WhatsApp, because there's privacy concern regarding the WhatsApp encryption and Facebook's potential motives. So WhatsApp, they boast an end-to-end encryption, which means that only the sender and recipient of a message can read the contents. So not even WhatsApp itself claims that they can access the message itself. Okay. So they say this offers users significant privacy when communicating. And since Facebook owns WhatsApp, the company desires to leverage user data for targeting advertising, right? So this is a very critical source of revenue for them. So WhatsApp encryption makes this data collection rather difficult. So this article that was shared with us, it reveals that Facebook has assembled a research team to explore what they call homomorphic encryption. Homomorphic encryption.
I've been waiting all day for you to read that phrase. Yeah, go ahead. Homomorphic.
Well, anyways, this is a theoretical concept that would enable analyzing encrypted data without decryption. Well, essentially, Facebook seeks a way to access the valuable information, the user data, and this is going to be all for advertising purposes.
Of course.
They say preserving encryption. I don't buy this one bit. So think of the idea here, where Facebook potentially analyzing encrypted messages, even without decryption. And this obviously raises privacy concerns for many users out there. Is there a backdoor for data collection practices? Probably. And Facebook, they're denying these accusations of wanting to exploit user data. They claim that the research is just in the early stages and doesn't guarantee a solution. WhatsApp, I can't give it enough thumbs down. I suggest if anybody is using it, use something else. Unless you don't care about your privacy. If you don't, then use WhatsApp and you're in good hands. But if you do care about it, certainly WhatsApp shouldn't be on the list of items you should be using.
Let's go back last week or 2 weeks ago. Little AccessVZ breadcrumb session here. Remember the story that Facebook, Meta, whatever, was selling the contents of the DMs to Netflix? So the problem we had at that time, and the problem that I think whoever wrote the article that we referred to on the show had, was that these are supposed to be encrypted messages. There shouldn't be a way for you to get these. So Facebook boasts encryption on WhatsApp, on Instagram, and on the Meta Facebook Messenger platform itself. Oftentimes it says, the single group person-to-person messages are encrypted. WhatsApp, I think last year or the year before, just introduced group encryption. So actually even group messages are encrypted now, data, files, whatever, plus the text itself. This has to call into question whether or not any of that is actually true. Does it not?
100%.
Of course. And so I would say for people, like you mentioned, if you look at what's happening here, it's a slow kind of trickle. The Overton window is expanding in order to fit the idea that, no, it's encrypted, but we can actually get data from what you're sending. You know what this reminds me of? When the Amazon, whatever, Echo people or the Amazon Alexa people were saying, no, the data we get is anonymized. And then you find out, 2 years later that they're using it in murder trials. Well, is it really anonymized? Is it really homomographic or whatever the fuck the term is? Sorry for the swear word there, but like, it's not. It's clearly not. And people who think that this is the case, especially with these big mega corporations, give your head a shake. They're not out to protect your data. They're not out to protect you. They are arms of the government. And, whether it's for advertising or for other purposes, it will not be the only reason your data is de-anonymized. Period, end of story. It's been like this, since this sort of data was available, this will be no different. Be careful with the things you say and where you say them. More than ever, this is maybe the most important thing to consider when you're sending messages or sending data to other people.
And something else that's very important are domain names. And EasyDNS, they have launched an AI domain name generator. And it's live right now. You simply go to easydns.com. It's at the top. So you could, at the top of the page, you can see the AI name generator. I tried it out. It's pretty cool because it prompts you with a box you fill in and you just type in what it is. It is your website's going to be all about and what you want the suffix to be. And from there, it's going to spit out a bunch of suggestions for you. So if you're looking to do some squatting on domain names and you want to get a bunch of good ones, you could use EasyDNS's name generator. That's all done by AI. And you can't query anything else. It's not giving you any questions about, or you can't, sorry, no answers about transsexuals and them being in sports, stuff like that. This is simply just AI generated. It's targeted, it's focused. This is what you want, and it's a cool service.
So I got some good ones here. The prompt I used was Lens NHL 94 Memorabilia Shack. And the one it gave me that I think you might like, and NHL 94 Memorabilia.
That's pretty cool.
Not bad. So there you go. Thing might work okay. I'm going to have to look into this some more. I like that one. Yeah. We also got some other ones here. We got Puck Fever 94. Also good. Classic Ice 94, Puck Legacy 94. This is not bad. Not bad. If you did want to ever open plates, a... Though. Oh, yeah. Man, that'd be pretty good.
Some people have looked. So it's Saskatchewan and New Jersey, but not Ontario. Somebody already took the one in Ontario. So, yeah, there's a list of who has the 94 plates for whatever state and province. And
wow,
can't get it in Ontario. Somebody has it, and it's not unknown who has it.
You know that another part of the service, I don't know if you actually said this when you were describing it, but it tells you whether or not the domain is taken or not taken. Mm-hmm. Yeah, pretty good. I like this. Yeah. I like this. I might start collecting domain names like any good Bitcoiner would. Anyway.
Yeah,
that's Access of Easy. Thanks for tuning in. Subscribe, podcast, YouTube. We don't have Instagram or anything else, but if we did, we'd tell you. For now, though, Len is making sure we don't get it. Don't want to have our data stolen and our DMs decrypted after all. So till next time, we'll see you. Take care of yourself and enjoy your weekend.
Take care.